It's 2:07 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios, and it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, the LA Times finally got around to covering the news that we told you a couple hours ago that the child molester that George Gascon decided to put in women's juvie because he lied about being a transgender woman has been charged with murder in Kern County. Here's the LA Times headline. Woman whose sex assault case tested D.A. Gascon's policy on juveniles is charged with murder.
Well, at least he's going to be prosecuted in Kern County, which means the sane people will be in charge.
Yeah. Kern County's not sending him to women's juvie.
No, that's not how they do things in Bakersfield.
The age of 26, that's monster, has a rap sheet enough to be on his fourth strike.
800-222-KABC is the telephone number, 1-800-222-5222. It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. She is a California state senator representing Orange County in Sacramento and a candidate for Orange County Board of Supervisors, Senator Pat Bates. Senator Bates, thanks so much for stopping by.
Well, thanks for having me, John. Great to hear your voice.
Likewise. Well, let's start out with something I don't understand. As someone who has represented Orange County in the state legislature for years and on the Board of Supervisors and in local government, maybe you can explain this to me because I don't understand it. For some reason, the governor of the state of California, Gavin Newsom, is on some sort of jihad against Orange County. He went on the late night shows and attacked Huntington Beach. He went on various other national programs and attacked the county, certainly attacked them when their beaches were open in the early days of the shutdown. And he gave a speech in front of the California Realtors Association where he went off on Orange County. Let's listen.
We need to keep leaning in. Housing Accelerator Program, 1.75 million. Home ownership programs that you help fund and design. 7,600 families benefiting just last year with $139 million of grants as it relates to down payment and closing costs. Another $100 million we put up to grow that program, and more we'll be announcing in just a few weeks in our May revise. We are moving in the right direction in a way we haven't done in the past. If you think all that's gobbledygook, ask Huntington Beach. We sued them. And trust me, if you want to get on a recall petition, sue one of your own cities. We did it because they weren't even planning, let alone zoning, on housing. 46 other cities we put under notice. Two-thirds of them now.
Why do we have to have slums in Huntington Beach?
Senator Bates, why does he have such a bee in his bonnet with Orange County?
Well, I think it's because we still value conservative principles, and certainly that's not the direction of our government. When you look at the high cost of living, the spending that continues, and there has been no investment clearly in the things that really are needed, investment in infrastructure for, you know, above ground storage for water. We hear all of the draconian projections about drought, yet where's the money for building Sites Reservoir? It's been out there. You know, and the public supported it several years ago. I think it was the water bond in, was it 2016, $3 billion to really start and have that thing operative by now. No action. So you go down the list, and basically what we've called for, and we're representatives from Orange County, Republican legislators have called for all these things, and it's fallen on deaf ears.
One of the things that Newsom said recently is that he would not call on people to not water their lawns. He wouldn't force you to make your lawn die. However, about a week after he said that, various water boards in Los Angeles County voted to place draconian restrictions on water usage. And in Los Angeles, the mayor, Eric Garcetti, is urging residents to snitch on one another if they're using more water than they deem that they should be using. Do you believe that water restrictions like that could be coming to Orange County?
We have an incredible group of policymakers on our water boards, and they have done an excellent job in using what is I call an incentive-based program in terms of water use. So you have a base based on the size of your family, and that's your allocation. If you go over it, incrementally, your bill increases so that you are in charge. Once again, all local control, whether it be our county, our cities, or individual, when you have control over the spending, then you make the right decisions. And they have left that, I think, to the role of individuals. And we're doing a great job based on our water people were up here the other day and how we're managing the conservation at the same time, not graying all of our lawns. So I don't believe that comes to Orange County in the same draconian fashion. But I do think that we see with Governor Newsom and the majority party, there are promises made that are not kept. And I like to use promises made, promises kept, because that was the mantra of the Orange County Transportation Authority when I served on that board. All the promises were made when we increased the sales tax, and that was difficult for conservatives to vote for a tax, but we did. They have met to the letter every promise made on the improvement to our transportation in Orange County. And you know, if you drive, Orange County is one of the least congested, not that we have no congestion, but the least congested of many of the surrounding counties. So if the governor would make promises like, hey, no draconian water conservations will be placed on all of you, then let's see what he does. Is he hands-free because he's leaving it to the locals? Well, then the locals have to determine through a good policy approach, and I consider that to be very important when it's incentivized. So you're in charge of what your bill is going to be, then it works. And I've seen it work in my own water district is Moulton Niguel. Excellent job. I basically kept mine at base. A few times we've gone over. Sometimes it's been because we had a plumbing leak or something like that. And I think it's doing a great job. These are things that, you know, really people make good decisions when you let them make those decisions instead of government running our life. And that's what I see as the real problem approaching California, a decade ago. And look where we are. Government's running everybody's lives, and we're in the worst shape we've ever been. Highest taxes, highest gas tax. All of these things are just unbelievable when I look back, 10, 15 years ago and the kind of opportunities we had for businesses. You know, our schools were doing better, and it's just gone over the cliff.
We're speaking with Senator Pat Bates, who is also running for the Orange County Board of Supervisors. You can follow her on Twitter at PatBatesCA and get her online at BatesForSupervisor.com. Senator, there seems to be an effort out there to turn Orange County into Los Angeles. Los Angeles has one of the worst district attorneys in the country, a Soros-funded district attorney in George Gascón. In just the last week, we've learned that he is not going to charge the man who had a knife on him, disguised as a gun, and assaulted comedian Dave Chappelle at the Hollywood Bowl in front of 15,000 people live and millions of people on YouTube. According to the DA's office, that's not a felony. That's a misdemeanor. And he turned it over to the city attorney's office. We also know that there is an individual who's 26 years old that they have in custody at a female juvenile detention facility who is a convicted sex offender. And Gascón was prepared to let this individual out of that detention center in a short period of time and not require them to register as a sex offender. Well, today we learned that individual who claims to be transgender, but you look at the person, that's just a false claim. They're now wanted in Kern County for murder and sexual assault. And George Gascón was planning on letting this person out of the detention center and releasing them into society. There is now a candidate running for district attorney in Orange County who shares those beliefs and wants to bring those same policies to Orange County. Do you think on any planet there is a scenario where Orange County could go for one of these Soros DAs?
Can I give a real simple answer?
Please.
The answer is no. I do believe that with our sheriff's department and our district attorney together. They are one of the best in terms of fighting crime and actually understanding what we have right now is all crime is local. You've heard all politics is local. All crime is local. That's what's happening at the local level. Crime has increased, yet the false narrative that's out there with people like Gascon is that crime is down. Well, if you look at a whole region and you look at a certain type of crime, yeah, those numbers prove that. But when you look at what's happening in our local communities, we've got the smash and grab. We've got the home invasion. We've got people following people home from shopping or restaurants and in broad daylight or dusk. They are robbing people gunpoint. Those are things that are happening at the local level. And our sheriff's department and our district attorney are on top of that. And those people get the extent of the law that can be, you know, brought against them. In other communities, LA in particular, you know, the perpetrator becomes the victim and is treated more like the victim because they had some bad upbringing, you name it, you know, you have to excuse them and they shouldn't be incarcerated. They should be rehabilitated. I am all for that, all for that. But when you do not have programs that are working because there's no revenue there to support them, they are not being rehabilitated. They're just being let back out on the streets, and they're doing the same thing they did to get into prison in the first place. So Orange County has the best. We are one of the safest counties in the nation, and I credit totally our district attorney and our sheriff for providing that. And also, we are very, very good with providing our law enforcement folks with adequate resources to do the job that they need to do to keep us safe.
One of the problems, besides district attorneys like George Gascon, is at the statewide level, we have a California Department of Justice, the California Attorney General's Office, that is run by another Soros-supported individual. It's Rob Bonta, who has been appointed by Governor Gavin Newsom to that post. He's running for a full 4-year term. And you look at the power that exists in that office and the ability to damage public safety in California if you abuse that power, which has been done for years and years and years and years. In that office, you have the ability to do things like prosecute crimes like the Dave Chappelle attacker if you want to, if the local district attorney refuses to do their job. You also have the power to write the title and summary for ballot initiatives that have really impacted public safety in California, namely Prop 47 and Prop 57. Exactly. If they were described accurately to voters, if voters knew what they were buying when those initiatives were put on the ballot, I don't believe, even in deep blue California, they would have supported Prop 47 or Prop 57. Do you believe there is an opportunity that exists, a realistic opportunity, for a Republican or a decline to state candidate who is sane when it comes to criminal justice to win that office over Rob Bonta to make sure that sanity reigns?
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
I do believe that, John, because, again, back to the crime statistics, we can talk about crime going down, but when people experience that in their own neighborhoods, in their own communities, the answer is it's not going down where I live, and it's always about, you know, our own neighborhoods. And I think that that has to be the message, that there has to be a very strong effort to ensure that our communities are safe, and you do that by putting people in prison who should be in there and not, you know, letting them out early like on Prop 47, 57. And I do believe that the people that write the ballot arguments ought to be basically in the legislative analyst office or another place that's nonpartisan, because it has been totally disguised in terms of what these bills are actually doing. And look at the outcome. We have a number, and I won't go over, you know, in the areas that people have voted for something and then call my office and say, why is this happening? And I say, how did you vote on that? And they didn't realize a certain provision in that particular ballot measure was the one that was going to really hurt them, either in terms of, you know, public safety or financial issues. So we do need to, I think, revise who are the ones that write the ballot initiatives. I don't think it should be given to a partisan office. And I do believe that those individuals who are running for that seat, a couple of them, have a much better chance to win in California, whether they're NPP or Republican, because people, they see the reality and they're not believing the messaging that's going on from the top.
What you just described is so accurate, and it's really a component of both the homeless and the crime issue that people don't talk about enough. We know that a lot of the people living on the streets are dealing with mental illness or addiction issues, but a huge component of them are people who belong in prison but were released early, and they're marginally employable, and they're living in these encampments, and they're preying on other homeless people, and they're committing crimes to finance their lifestyle. If those people were still in prison, as a judge and a jury determined they should be there, then they wouldn't be out preying on people, and the homeless population wouldn't be ballooning the way that it is.
Absolutely, 100%. You've hit it on the head. People need to have, we need to require treatment for people who are seriously mental ill. There are certainly proposals to do that. They are, you know, controversial in some areas. As Republicans, we're calling for the state to commit $10 billion to build the facilities needed to help address the crises related to mental health, substance abuse, and homelessness. And we know, I think it was close to 80% of the people who were cleared out of one encampment in Orange County were actually drug addicted to some substance of some sort. And they have to survive, have to have money for the drugs, not for, you know, the other basics of life. So actually, we have to commit a huge amount of infrastructure to change what we see going on. $17 billion, as you know, John, has been spent to address homelessness, and it grew in that same five-year period. So there's a lot of surplus that's available in this budget year. We'll hear the May revise on Friday, and we're calling for a significant investment in mental health and homelessness needs. We're calling for some money to go to reduce the cost of the unemployment debt that, you know, it's about $20 billion that have to be reduced. We're calling for about $10 billion in that to help our employers, because they will be the ones that have to reduce that debt. We're calling for the money, again, back to the water issue. We want about $3 to $4 billion invested in the infrastructure for above ground storage for water, so we're not faced with these long term droughts, and we have a reserve. So there's a lot of money there that can go to fix a lot of California problems. And basically, I think that's why Republicans have a great chance to win California. When we focus on the issues that are hurting our people, their quality of life on every single, you know, cost of living, quality of life issue, we have a great opportunity. The messaging will be very important, and appreciate programs like yours that give us an opportunity to focus on some of these things. But it's kind of like, are we tired of high crime, high homelessness, high cost of living? The answer is yes. Let's focus on how to address those and bring this huge surplus, which is the people's money, by the way. Let us bring that right now to end homelessness, encampments, address all of these critical quality of life issues. And I think we can do that. And with the help of people spreading that that message, we'll be able to do it, I believe.
Senator Pat Bates, representing Orange County in the California State Legislature, also a candidate for supervisor in Orange County. You can get her online at batesforsupervisor.com and follow her on Twitter at PatBatesCA. Senator Bates, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me, John.
As we mentioned before, after the show started, we had a bit of some breaking news, Randy.
That's right, because the Senate investigation report into Eric Garcetti's knowledge of sexual harassment in his office that was portrayed by his top staffer, Rick Jacobs, was out. A 23-page report that has a lot of interviews with a lot of different staffers and whistleblowers and other people that were aware of what was going on at City Hall. And the conclusion was that Eric Garcetti, more likely than not, was well aware of the sexual harassment and racist behavior going on from his deputy mayor, top chief staffer, top advisor, Rick Jacobs.
And because this report dropped after we began the show, we've only been able to go through some of it. However, many of the parts that we've seen were not in the report that the city of Los Angeles produced.
And that's a lot of what this report is showing, is that when Eric Garcetti submitted his own report that was ordered by Mustache Man Mike Fuhrer, it turns out they didn't talk to a lot of the principal players, a lot of people aware of this behavior, and because the people that were interviewed weren't under oath, you had a lot of Garcetti staffers, the top-level staffers, like Anna Guerrero, contradicting themselves in the report that Garcetti had, as opposed to the interviews with the Senate.
I've introduced our next guest before as the woman who single-handedly forced the U.S. Senate to do their job. I'm going to do it again because it's true, and today it was proven to be true for all eyes to see. Naomi Seligman, former communications director for Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm good. Today must be a big day for you and the rest of the victims of Rick Jacobs.
I mean, it's a big day for those that have been victimized by Rick Jacobs for not just years, but decades. And for those that saw the mayor of Los Angeles witness it, enable it, tolerate it, cover it up, and then lie about it. So it's a big day for a lot of people.
I mentioned before that many of the details in this report were not part of the report produced by the city of Los Angeles. Eric Garcetti keeps referring back to that report as the report that cleared him of wrongdoing. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that is just not true. So we have three iterations of this independent investigation that Leslie Ellis pulled together. We know that they interviewed, although they interviewed a couple of dozen people, they did not interview, nor did they place any of the depositions or other sworn materials from witnesses, whistleblowers, and victims. And the only victim that they included, Henry Casas, they used a lot of their space to disparage him and to use the old line that he brought it on himself. We also know that with these three reports, one in February, one in April, and one of July of last year, after the mayor had been nominated, the mayor chose to send the first iteration of that report in February. And what wasn't in that report? What wasn't in that report was the interview with Rick Jacobs. And what do we know about that Rick Jacobs interview? Rick Jacobs says it was common for him as a gay man to kiss people on the mouth as a common way to greet people. And if we contextualize that with what we see in that report, in the other versions of it, we know that the mayor, his wife, Amy Elaine Wakelin, his former chief of staff, who was put on administrative leave, but is now back as senior advisor, Ana Guerrero, and our current CAO, but former deputy chief of staff, Matt Szabo, all acknowledged that Rick Jacobs kissed people on the mouth. So we know it's...
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Common practice. We know that they've seen it and they've acknowledged it. And we know that Rick himself has said that he has done it. So the mayor really gamed the Senate. the mayor gave this incomplete, inconclusive, questionable, and untruthful report to the State Department, which then gave it to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and has now told the White House and the Senate that this is a report that somehow says that he did nothing, that he knew nothing. But we now know, and we have known, but now we see it in black and white in a very detailed and also a very conclusive report that the mayor did know and the mayor did nothing. And then he lied to the Senate and the American people.
One of the things that we've seen take place over time, and it's understandable because if you're working there, you don't want to get your boss in trouble, I guess, if that's where your money, your income comes from, where people have changed their stories. They said one thing one day, a different thing another day, and that sort of thing. In this report, there were text messages. There were electronic correspondence where people were saying what happened in real time as it was happening. To me, if you were to use that as evidence, that's more conclusive than what you say after you think about, well, maybe I'll lose my job if I say the wrong thing.
Yeah, we have some really damning texts that were sent between between Alex Komisar, the former director of communications, and myself. Between Anna Barr, who currently is the communications director for Karen Bass's campaign, who was then a deputy communications person, and Susie Emmerling. And then we have a number of other people within the mayor's orbit, the president of the Mayor's Fund, the executive director of the Getty House Foundation. And some of these texts, Anna Barr states, Rick, he abused and harassed me the whole time he worked in the mayor's office. And she's asked, kissed on the lips? Yes, of course. Squeezes? You should reach out. Crass sexual statements? No. Why not? I'm not getting into the mix. I don't want to bring Eric down. So, she sadly endured some really awful behavior. And she didn't want to say anything, because she didn't want to bring Eric down, because if the truth came out, he would have, he would have been under a microscope. And by the way, he would have been outed for lying. And at this point, she talks about how multiple reporters had reached out to her. And she talks about how her own fiance was groped and squeezed. So, we're in a place where we have texts from Alex Komisar, who's the former director of communications, who wrote to me and said, I got hit on by Rick again. And I said, oh, that's vile. And then I got, other texts from Alex Komisar when the story came out that Officer Matthew Garza, former protective detail for the mayor who has sued the city for sexual harassment and abuse, when that story came out in July of 2020, I got a text from Alex and says, looks like it's finally happening with Rick. And these are people that have testified under oath that they knew nothing. They saw something. Alex Komisar said, I can't recall, 43 times in his second deposition when asked about the sexual harassment and abuse. When the mayor is asked about seeing one of his top staffers, his chief counsel, there's no nice way of saying this, but being basically dry humped by Rick Jacobs in a Senate elevator after the mayor testifies, the mayor says, I can't recall, but it's something that, it's something that the mayor would have done, is intervene if he had seen it. And we know the mayor intervened. We know he saw it. We know he intervened. We also know there's a photo, right? There's a photo of Rick Jacobs, some other gentleman, the mayor, and Heather Repenning, and Rick Jacobs has his hand on another man's genitals while the mayor's giving two thumbs up. And I think what's really interesting about this report is that, not only, and it's something that I've said before and others have too, is that that photo, regardless of the mayor saying that, I didn't see it, The point being is that Rick Jacobs felt comfortable touching another man's genitals, literally inches from the mayor. But what we also know is that all of those folks in that photo had the photo later that night, and none of them reported it to anyone. And so that just shows how accepted that behavior was. And whether, I don't think it was gladly accepted by these staffers, but there was a reality to it. When I reported to Ana Guerrero, the former chief of staff, that I had been kissed by Rick Jacobs, she just rolled her eyes and said, that's what it is. There's nothing we can do. That's just Rick being Rick. And that's the refrain we heard again and again and again. And it is not the way that an elected official should run his office. And it's certainly not the way someone who wants to represent our country in another nation overseas should be running his office.
We're speaking with Naomi Seligman, former communications director for L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti. Naomi, the White House was quick to trash this report, say none of it is true, defend the character of Eric Garcetti, and say they are standing behind him 110%. Randy, you have those details.
This is what an anonymous White House spokesperson told Axios, quote, "This partisan report was a hit job from the beginning, and many of the claims have already been conclusively debunked by more serious independent reports. The president has confidence in Mayor Garcetti and believes he will be an excellent representative in India at a critical moment, and calls for the Senate to swiftly confirm him."
Yeah, it's very disappointing from the White House. I would invite them to let us know what is not true about this report. This report is meticulously noted, researched, investigated. They actually talked to new whistleblowers that hadn't been interviewed in the Ellis report. So we actually have a lot of new information. You know, new information, what was happening at the U.S. China Climate Leaders Summit, where Rick Jacobs was pushing his groin into a man back and forth, uncomfortably so, where he was calling the Chinese leaders yellow people, where he was calling his own assistant yellow man, China man. These are all, you know, a lot of new details that we actually have. And interestingly, Mayor Garcetti, nor any of his staff, was willing, but very few of his staff were willing to meet with Senator Grassley's judiciary investigative staff, which, you know, as a former Senate staffer, we know how disrespectful that is to Senate decorum, how disrespectful that is to an investigative body. And it's shocking from those that he's looking for votes from that he's refusing to meet with them to talk about what is in this report, to talk about the interviews that they had, to better understand what he did and did not know. I think that speaks volumes.
What do you think Garcetti's chances are right now of being confirmed as ambassador to India?
Listen, it's not up to me to make predictions. What I do know is that, and what I do hope, is that these senators now look at this evidence and take the appropriate action. This nomination should be withdrawn. That, you know, President Biden, you know, sat with Gretchen Carlson and other senators and signed the Ending Forced Arbitration Act, you know, just a couple of months ago. He talks about, you know, urging Senator Cuomo to resign for sexual harassment and abuse. He talks about being an ally. He talks about his regret over his treatment of Anita Hill. Well, it's time to show it. This is really, the proof is in the pudding. And this report is exemplary. And I find it disappointing, painful, and pretty gross, actually, that the President of the United States, today, as we are looking at an onslaught of women's rights, is disempowering the voices of the victims here of Rick Jacobs and of you know, Mayor Garcetti is enabling of that behavior.
Naomi Seligman, former communications director for Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, thank you so much for stopping by. We'll check in again real soon.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. It's 2:50. Let's take a look at the roads.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.